Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm on the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, that door will be on the Ooze, spread out.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
They kind of missed the whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downing, aka Beast Zero, and on the air with me is my co-host Matt, also known as the Dark Fool. Matt, how you doing today, man?
Dude, I'm doing really well. The hangover has now subsided. I'm here in San Diego, chilling with Zach of Satanic International, and we saw the lovely Zandora LaVey play last night. And it was amazing, let me tell you.
Right, I bet it was, yeah. You were telling me how much fun you guys had on your man day. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, man day. Hey, more man days come out like that, dude, where you're, you know, bumping elbows with high-end Satanists and, you know, getting naughty pictures and shit like that with hula hoop girls. Hey, I'll go on those more often. Call them what you will.
Hey, it is what it is, man. I'm glad it was successful in the end, so.
Hell yeah.
So, I got to tell you, I just got to kind of pause for a minute because I was listening to the intro today and it just like hit me. And, you know, I've kind of up to this point really been sort of unsure if I liked the direction that I had taken the intro in. But after hearing it today, for some reason, it just kind of stuck. I like it. I really do. So it might stay around for a little while. I mean, you can actually kind of observe the history of Ooze intros just by checking out our archive and you know, going randomly by date. This is version 5, I think, that I've got running right now. So
okay, yeah. You can definitely trace the roots of it and, like, see where it's progressed. You can hear clips of, like, old clips, new clips within the intro. You got all sorts of hosts. You got Jason Sorrell. You got Zach. You got me. And pretty much paints a pretty picture.
Yeah, I think it works out pretty well. So today's topic, to be honest with you, I've struggled with answering this myself a lot, not because I don't inherently naturally understand the answer of it, but because I don't honestly believe that any kind of real psychological logic can be placed on why this phenomenon happens the way that it does. But since this was your baby, I figured I'll let you go ahead and kind of kick us off and introduce the topic and, I don't know, tell us where you're shooting from.
Well, I mean, pretty much shooting from the hip as a layman. You know, I mean, the topic today is, you know, like, even though science has progressed, you know, people hold on to, like, outdated, like, superstitions, outdated moral codes, all of these things. And, you know, these things, a lot of old traditions and old beliefs have been outdone by science. It's time to move on. But a lot of people don't want to move on for a variety of reasons, and that's really what I want to examine, is that why, even though the evidence and the proof is clear that certain things, okay, like, for example, the Bible. They claim that, if you do the math in the Bible, the earth is only, like, what, 12,000 years old, something like that, but you know, you look at science has shown us dinosaurs, has shown us, different periods, Jurassic, all of that stuff. So, yeah, obviously it's a lot older than 12,000 years old. The proof is there, but people do not want to move on. People do not want to look and say, okay, facts are facts. That was an old, outdated religion. We need to, you know, re-examine ourselves. And that's really what I want to see, is why why is it that we hold on so much as, you know, humans, as a collective?
Well, I mean, I'm going to start, I guess, by trying to answer this question for myself. I think what it is there has to be some kind of why. There has to be some kind of reason that is acceptable to you, at least surface-wise. And I think, you know, that's really what's going on there. You know, the belief that, you know, the world is only 12,000 years old or whatever you're saying the math is for the Bible. I'm not really exactly sure what it is, so I'll just go with the figures that you threw out there. When we have, you know, fossils and stuff like that can be carbon dated to much earlier times, it does seem kind of like a logical fallacy. But when you look at the fact that there is still a margin of error attached to these so-called sciences that we have to determine these timelines, it makes it difficult to develop some kind of level of trust with it when, you know, let me put it to you this way. If you have a gun with a chamber that holds six rounds and there's one bullet in it and it's one of those spin guns, I mean, for all intents and purposes, you can click that thing five times in a row and not blow your head off. But the problem comes down to the fact that you don't know where that one bullet lays. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And it's the same kind of thing when you talk about sciences like carbon dating and other things like that. Like, I can't think of what they call it when they actually use the sedimentary layers of the earth to measure the time span that's passed. But, you know, there's always a margin of error associated to this kind of thinking, and it's very dogmatic in a way, because in a sense it's kind of actually arguing the opposite of what you're saying here, which is why won't we let go of these outdated ideas when science clearly proves this. But the problem is, because a margin of error exists at all, it's not really fully proven. It can be assumed upon or presumed, but again, there's a margin of error attached to it. And so, you know, which one's really afraid to let go of the other? I think trying to seek reason or logic to anything that's not specific to what you're dealing with immediately within your sphere of things, sometimes that idea can kind of be found wanting.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, yeah, there is room for doubt. There is reasonable doubt, that sort of thing, margin of error. But, you know, I mean, if you look at, you know, statistically, I mean, you can make a claim. It's how well you can back it up and how well the evidence supports your theory. And a lot of times, a lot of traditions were made by men that speculated, and a lot of people are holding on to are speculations, whereas the evidence has already surfaced that proves contrary.
Okay. Here, let me spin it to you like this for a second and see what you think about this, okay? Let's just rewind to when you woke up this morning.
Okay.
This is how the day plays out. You wake up and you find your pants around your ankles, you find a used condom, you find a tub of KY jelly, and you find a big puddle of blood. And you don't know what the hell's going on. Before you know it, SWAT storming the apartment, and they're arresting you for the murder of Zandora LeVay. Okay.
Okay.
Now, you had quite a bit of to drink the night before, and maybe your memory's a little fuzzy, but you're pretty sure that you didn't kill this girl. I mean, actually, you know through and through that you didn't kill this girl. However, they've managed to gather up enough of what's called circumstantial evidence that would indicate that more than likely you did commit this crime. And they're able to hold this to you. But the whole time, the truth of it is that you did not commit this crime. You see what I'm saying? The evidence can be stacked in such a way that no matter how sure something is, that margin of error still accounts for something, and that margin of error in this particular circumstance is that you honestly didn't kill her. And so no matter how vast or slim that margin of error becomes, it's still there. And again, now in terms of courts, you know, we deal with this as reasonable doubt. You know, if it doesn't meet the measure of creating reasonable doubt, then it can be assumed to be true. But ultimately, there's still the availability that the process is flawed.
Oh, excellent point. Excellent point. However, that reasonable doubt can also swing in the opposite direction and favor things that are just, some things that are just absolutely absurd.
Yeah,
you know, I forgot to ask you this before the show, but did you happen to watch the videos that I sent you?
I perused a lot of them. You sent me almost 3 hours worth of video.
Right, yeah, and that was kind of last minute. I didn't expect you to go all in full length, but there were a couple of videos that I sent. I don't know, maybe we'll add an annotation, a note or something at the end of this video as to, you know, which YouTube users they belong to. But anyways, a lot of things came up in those videos, like confirmation bias, the placebo effect, pre-operational thinking. I mean, all of these things that have to do with conditions as to why people hold on to certain things rather than move on. And I don't know, I mean, a lot of the rhetoric that is being used can be used to support, like, you know, the flying spaghetti monster in the sky when science can obviously say there is none.
Right. Now, hang on just 1 second, because we actually have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the news. Caller?
Hello?
I believe this is Naga. Naga?
Oh.
Hello?
Naga Siva. No?
I'm going to have to try again, man. For whatever reason, we're not getting your sound to us. So, call back in. That'd be fine. That'd be groovy. I'll be watching the switchboard.
Well, anyway, yeah. So, back to the topic at hand. Yeah, I mean, a lot of words, concepts came up that pretty much describe the human condition as to why it still holds on to, why we as humans hold on to outdated things. But that is an excellent point, margin of error. But the question is, at that point, you have to question, like, well, how big is this margin of error? How big is this reasonable doubt? You know, and that's when it gets, I don't know, when it gets pretty, I mean, you can kind of tell when things get heavily distorted, when they're, like, not as, you know, when things start getting not as clear cut, or when things are reasonable, when they're not reasonable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. The things that I process here in my mind when talking about this, right, I immediately think of people like Zachariah Sitchin and his
yes,
and his theories. I mean, from a surface level, from an outward perspective, a first glance, I mean, you really think to yourself, wow, this guy, you know, he's got a case. It's hard to argue, but, you know.
Yeah, and back in the day, I almost fell into that trap. I was looking into Sitchin, and I was thinking, oh, wow, these are interesting theories. But one of the things that I got was, I mean, like his 12th planet theory about how this other planet that collided with ours or with another one to create the Big Bang, et cetera. It's like, it went on its own orbit, but it's like, how would a planet like that, you know, going on its own orbit without a sun, you know, how would it sustain any life? And that's the biggest hole in his argument. You know, that's another big I should say, reasonable doubt right there. Or
right.
Things where it just starts becoming a little silly, you know?
Right. And now, here's my thinking on this whole deal and why ultimately I suppose I'm indifferent to whether people let go of their old superstitions to grab for more modern, more well-dressed superstitions, which is really what we're talking about and what we're dealing with here. The problem remains in the fact that outside of anything that you can empirically test yourself, you know, you're left with an uncomfortable level of uncertainty. And, you know, I think this is why, you know, in my case, I don't make the assumption for there to be a God. I know that there's a pretty solid case that there isn't one. However, I don't make the assumption that there isn't a God either, because I think that it's way outside of my spectrum of being able to actually personally empirically test. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I mean, yeah. See, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up. One of the videos that I sent you, I mean, yeah, one of them was a 21-minute video. In fact, I'm going to be pwning this guy soon, with other videos and other arguments. But here's the thing: is that empirical data in and of itself also, I mean, there is, you said a certain level of knowledge. Knowledge in and of itself can be, you know, a falsehood. For example, like a lot of people put too much stock in, like, oh, you know, science proves it wrong. This guy in particular, in this video, he said, there's a psychosis in the brain, which is why, why we believe in irrational, retarded things. You know, it's due to a psychosis. I think there's many more factors that go into that. And he says, no, it's a psychosis in the brain, and you need to be treated. And it's like, no, there are other factors involved, such as culture, such as, maybe not so much culture, but just say, yeah, it's one of those things that's adapted because, you know, my father believed in a God, his father believed in a God. I mean, it's not a psychosis because they're not religious fanatics. Now, that does apply to certain people that are just, you know, borderline schizophrenic. But to be completely certain on one specific thing, that reasonable doubt comes into play because, you know, you're holding on to one thing, one piece of empirical data, when in fact there's, you know, you're holding on to a piece of the puzzle, but you've missed the entire image.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree with that at all, but, I mean, he's not far off in terms of it being a psychological deviance. You know,
true. Yeah, I'm not denying that, but I think in some cases, I mean, he's not weighing all of the facts, which I think could also be another fallacy.
Right on. Right on. I'm sorry, man. I got a little bit distracted for a second there. You know, the thing here in my mind is this. You know, most people accept whatever, you know, you want to call it, you know, that their religion, you know, by default, because, you know, mom and dad believe this is what I believe. And it's only when they actually, you know, put their faith to the test that I consider them to even be legitimately part of their own religion. You know, when you challenge, you know, when you take that leap of faith, you know, that's when you really truly are, you know, practicing your religion. You know, it's, you know, but otherwise it's just aesthetic. It's just, you know, a social signifier that you use, but
At the same time, that could also, I mean, faith could also be a cop-out. It could be like, well, I just have faith, the end, you know, without having to weigh any data whatsoever, carry the weight of thought.
Right, but see, this is what I'm saying to you. When I talk about taking a leap of faith, it inadvertently indicates that we're discussing casting a shadow of doubt upon what it is that you claim to believe. It's actually testing it. It's actually putting it to the fire, as our good friend Dan Dredd would say. You know, so, you know, that's, you know, different. That's someone who truly believes versus somebody who is, you know, carrying a social dogma or a social custom, you know, because by default that's what they were born into. So I think the first thing there is to separate the fact that I personally think someone who has taken this kind of a leap of faith and still holds to whatever it is that they believe, that they, in fact, don't suffer from any kind of psychological deviance at all. That, you know, they've tried it and, you know, to whatever satisfactory have met their, you know, their conditions to believe in that. It's the people who automatically, by default, without even, you know, putting any kind of measure to it, those are the people that I think have some psychological flaw. And I think a lot of atheists make this mistake when they're trying to divide up the theists. You know,
right,
they just,
right.
Yes. So. Right.
Well, at
so,
the same
yeah.
time, I mean, why do we hold on to these things? Why, I mean, back to the original, you know, point of this discussion is, like, why is it that we hold on? Why is it that, like, if something is outdated and you know it to be outdated, you know, why not just move on? And some things would be like, well, like, okay, churches, for example, have already established power on that thing. In fact, universities, let's look at the flip side. Universities have done the same. Some universities that say this theory is correct, it cannot be proven wrong. And then other scientists test a theory that goes contrary to that and says, no, you're wrong, actually. And then there's a big, huge backlash. And it's like, well, why do we hold on? Why do we have an institutionalized mind like that?
Right on. I'm going to real quick throw this out here. If anybody has, you know, 2 cents on this or whatever, the call in number is 347-989-1371. I'd really like to hear other people's input as to, you know, what they think about this, as to why we do it, any merit that they might see in one way or the other. You know, a lot of times you can play devil's advocate with your own thinking and you know, come up with something that's reasonably understandable. Otherwise, I mean, the truth, as far as I can tell, of why this kind of thing happens is simply... because we don't like unknowns. We don't like the air of mystery. We want to be sure. We want to be certain. We want to be comfortable in leaving the house that there's, you know, this anthropomorphic guy sitting up there scratching his beard going, that school bus is going to hit him if... he keeps walking the way he's walking. I'm going to go ahead and drop a dollar right here, right now, so that it catches his eye and he stops for just long enough for the school bus to go by. You know, that's the kind of thing, that the kind of security that they're building up in themselves with it, with this, you know. And again, you know, I want to separate those type of people from the type of people who actually put what they believe to the test on a regular basis. Because I think that in that line and that way of thinking, it holds its own merit regardless. You know, even if they're absolutely wrong, the fact they're willing to challenge it and come to their own conclusion makes them right in my eyes.
Right. Another thing I wanted to examine too is how we process information, how we look at things. And in one of the videos that I had sent, they had one about how children, you know, like the different stages of child development. And two things that came up were pre-operational thinking and pre-conventional morality. And starting with morality, the pre-conventional morality phase has like a black and white type of thing. If it's not this, then it is this. And, you know, if people are wrong, it's because they choose to do wrong, you know, which a lot of people, like, especially when you take homosexuality into account, a lot of people argue against that, saying, well, it's a genetic thing. Never mind the fact that genetics could play a role in that they don't choose this. With pre-conventional morality, it's like a phase that's fostered in life. You know what I mean? For example, like, I think society also dictates how we should think, obviously, how we should feel. And certain stages of development are, you know, kept because certain things are rewarded and other things are punished. So I think a lot of pre-conventional morality, black and white mentality, you can definitely see that kind of, you're either Republican or Democrat. You can obviously see that in American society. And pre-operational thinking works pretty much the same way.
Yeah, to some extent, I think that that's a very narrow-minded approach to a much broader much broader problem that's arising. But of course, then again, I can, you know, see what merit it has when you limit the when you limit the precepts to whatever conditions are ideal for it.
Oh, by the way, just to clear the air, I mean, these are just ideas that I've come across for the show. Not necessarily saying I believe in them 100%, but I mean, I'm looking at other factors that could possibly go into why we hold on to certain things and not choose to progress.
Right on. Well, Matt, I think it's great that regardless of what you hold, and I'm not necessarily standing in any position that I particularly hold, as much as I am myself kind of weighing out what we're talking about. And my first thing with anything as I'm thinking about it is immediately to see what its downfalls are. That's what I try to go for. What things will require the most work for me to come to some kind of, cognitive understanding. And, oh, my God, you might want to shift back to wherever you were, man, because it sounds like you're rubbing up against the monkey.
No, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, that was the monkey, all right. It kind of looks like an airplane and, the outside. But, yeah, I can see how you got a monkey out of that one.
Right, well, yeah. I mean, for you, it always comes back to the monkey, so.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's all about the monkey. I don't have the sound effects today. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, right on. No, that's good. No sound effects. So, all right, where are we in terms of this conversation? Because, to be quite honest with you, I think we're trying to, answer, I don't know, the meaning of life when we don't have the question phrased properly.
Well, I mean, there's several things that you can pick apart when it comes to the initial topic of the show. You know, like, what is progress? You know, I'm talking a lot about the progression of mankind and holding on to old ideas and moving on to ones that have been tested and proven worthy. But,
okay.
I mean, there's a lot of things that we can examine within the question itself, how it's phrased. There's also, I mean, when I bring up certain things, too, like pre-operational thinking and the conventional morality, these are parts of something that goes much bigger, obviously. And the other thing about that video I was telling you about, that atheist that says, oh, it's psychosis in the brain, that's it, done and done. Yeah, that's valid. Certain people may have a psychosis, but there's also a broader, there's many more factors to consider.
Right.
I mean, what I'm really doing is just attacking each and every one and saying, well, this could be a factor, that could be a factor. I mean, it's a pretty broad topic, which is what I like.
All right. Well, so what is progress? Define progress.
Okay, progress. Let's say societal progress. By holding on to a way of thinking that... I don't know. I think that a way of thinking such as Christianity, let's be honest, can be limiting in the sense that, you know, your perspective is skewed, your facts and your arguments are distorted, whereas a lot of stuff has come out, like you said, there's reasonable doubt, but a lot of evidence has come out to the contrary. Why not just accept that? I mean, why do Christians have to make a history museum where it shows man and dinosaur together, when in fact history, or at least scientific data, shows that that's not the case at all? You know, why try to fit things into a paradigm that doesn't work, rather than just say, okay, you know what, it's dead, we need to just let it go. And, you know, like these old pagan gods, okay, there's no guy in the sky that makes it rain, there's no guy in a rock that makes an avalanche. You know, these are just natural occurrences. Why not just take all of these old beliefs, put them aside, and just move forward? And by moving forward, that means saying, okay, I accept that these are out. I had this idea, it was proven wrong, it's outdated, let's see what else is out there. Keeping an open mind.
Right, but I think you're losing the perspective of how spin works, because that's what we're dealing with here. It's like the old expression that, you know, history is written by the winners.
True.
You know, it's that same thing. There's always so much more complexity involved in any one equation than can ever be accounted for, I think, by one logical mind. And so what ends up happening is today, you know, science proves this, but tomorrow science may come to a completely different conclusion using the exact same, you know, building stones that they came to just the day prior. It's just one variable has changed within the equation.
Right, exactly. And what I'm saying is, why still hold on to, you know, that's the thing, is that we hold on to one thing, we hold on to another thing. It's like, but even if it goes backwards, even if it reverts back to an old idea, you know, why not just accept it and just be open-minded enough to say, okay, well, let's go back to it. Let's re-examine this.
We got a call coming in from Texas. Texas, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. This is Silver Dot from Sin.
What's going on?
Hey, man, I wanted to jump in there. Hey, what's going on, guys? I wanted to jump in there. Dark Fool was calling it pre-operational thinking. There's also another phrase called suppositional beliefs, or in other words, you come to the table already believing something. You were talking about the idea that how come when things evolved, those things aren't stripped away, or like Dan Dredd was talking about with the fire, if those ideas don't stand the test, you actually strip those away. Well, when you were talking about the age of the Earth, for example, when you come to the table already believing that there is a God, it's easy to add him into the equation of how those things are possible. And I think that's the reason why, to answer the question of why do people cling on to traditions, is because they come already believing that these things are possible because they already believe in a God. And I think if you really analyze the beliefs that you come to the table with before you even talk about the problem of how old the Earth is or didn't know what flood happened or any of those type of things, if you actually go to the root of what you believe before you come to the table, I think that would help people realize and kind of test what they believe, and maybe that would help strip away those ideas, those presuppositional or predispositional beliefs that most people already have, that, you know, like you were saying, are either they were raised in it, they're indoctrinated into it, or just part of their culture or whatever the case may be.
Right. You raise a very valid point, actually, because I think that it's impossible for somebody to even approach this with an objective, if I can use that terminology loosely, an objective mindset, because no matter what, you're always going to come to the table with a presumed disposition to start with. Like, for instance, an atheist will always approach it with the absence of God in the picture. So it's the reverse argument of what you were just saying held true for the theist. So I think that's awesome. That's a very strong point, and that's something that we all really should keep in mind, because, you know, how far do we have to go before the facts are being stretched to fit whatever the theory is?
I mean, and that's a perfect example of what you were talking about earlier, as far as the age of the earth. Well, you can actually trace it back in the Bible. It's actually 6,000 years.
I wasn't sure about the data. Thank you for clarifying that.
I was actually researching it online while you guys were talking about it, and you can actually trace it back to Cain and Abel and all the way back to Adam and Eve, where it's 6,000 years. But if you actually, you can look at the helium accumulation in the air and sedimentary layers on the earth is actually 4.52 billion years old. So, I mean, we're not even in the ballpark. Stuff like that, if you come already with a predispositional belief of, you know, God exists, well, you know, you can't hold religion accountable for the outcome if you don't include it in the equation. So otherwise, I can't say, based on science, the earth isn't 6,000 years old. But if I put God in there, and like you were talking about, that reasonable doubt, if you include him in there, all of a sudden it's, you know, it might be possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm following it very well. And again, I think that you've made a very solid point here, one that I'm at this moment having a really hard time finding in a real valid argument against. So.
Yeah, I think that was really the main thing, like you were talking about why people hold on. That was the main thing for me. Mm-hmm. And the whole reason that I hopped on the boat with Satanism is really analyzing those beliefs before I even address any issues.
Well, there you go. And see, the thing is, though, I mean, if you put God into the equation, if you bring like a biblical God into the equation and say, well, and then you create circular arguments based on that that just really don't have any merit, as you know, in reality and what science can prove or what science can back up. The problem then becomes, well, okay, the evidence is stacked against me, despite what I believe. Why shouldn't I just, you know, throw it aside and move forward? You know, say, okay, I was wrong.
Right, but see, here's the deal. You ask a guy like Galileo how that plays out, and you'll have your answer.
Right.
Real quick here, gentlemen, we've got another call from a 623 area code, so I'm going to go ahead and put that on. 623, you're on.
Hello, this is Tim is Hardcore.
Oh,
Tim. Hey, Tim, what's up, man?
Hey, man, things are going good. I was just calling in and wanted to get in on this one. I think can I just go ahead and say what I need to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I think the main point is that what you're dealing with is literalists. And it's funny how, you know, I'll just throw this at the left-hand path seems to say that, well, literalism is the problem with Christianity, but it seems like the left-hand path seems to use literalism too. I don't believe that the Bible, I believe the Bible is 6,000 years old. I don't believe mankind is 6,000 years old, or nor the earth for that matter. I believe it is billions of years old. But my point is that I think that those literalists, and yeah, they throw God into it, and I might be rambling here, sorry if I am, that they might be throwing God into it, but the Bible is to me metaphorical, spiritual, whatever you name it, allegorical, whatever you want to put it, what do you want to put out there? But I think that, of course, I mean, it's the same thing. When I come to the table, do I see God in existence? Yes. But to the atheist, does he come and he comes to the table with God doesn't exist? So so you're already coming to the table completely opposite.
Right, which is exactly what I was touching on a few minutes ago, Tim. I completely agree with that, that it's impossible to escape that predisposition. So that's something that we have to factor in. And what creates that margin of error that I was talking about all the way in the beginning of this show. Tim, if you don't mind, just for our listeners, define what you think God is.
Yeah, you broke up the sentence. Define what I say God is?
Yes, what you think God is. Because you said when you come to the table, you see God. I think then that begs the question of what you see.
Okay, well, that's a fair question. Let me answer, see if I can answer that. What I see God is not this big bearded man in the sky. I don't believe we're looking at a big Jew on a throne, so to speak. What I see God is yes, I believe God can manifest himself individually or, apparition or whatever you want to call it. But I think that God is force, just like you would say the current is the force driving mankind. However, I see God as a force. He's omnipotent, if I said that correctly, sorry. That he is the driving force, as I call the kingdom, from my videos, the kingdom. And I believe that when you talk about, when you talk about all these other, I believe in a lot of different things, a lot of other spirit. A lot of the spirits. Some of those, when people talk about they see Thor, I think that what they did was just put an anthropomorphic view on a spirit. So I see, and again, God I see is the force behind all things. No, I don't think he's putting the dollar bill in front of me to stop me from hitting the bus, but I do believe he's saying, I gave you legs, run, there's a bus coming down the road. So, you know what I mean? I think that we can take things. So far, many people would stand down the road, a bus is coming, and then they would pray. And I know people like that, believe me. I know people like that, that would pray, and I believe that God would say, get out of the road. I gave you legs, run. So I hope that kind of answers it.
Yeah, I think you did a fantastic job answering that.
Okay.
So,
I see Satan as a force as well, as many of other things as a force. And I would say it's those little voices on our shoulders. You know what I mean? The little thing that we have on our shoulders that's pulling us one way or the other as to what. Again, I didn't come into Christianity. I wasn't born into it. I was born into nothing. My dad was a non-practicing Catholic, which pretty much means I didn't know he was until later on in life. But I went to church just to be with my wife because she was going to church. I didn't believe at all. I went because I seen something there. That's the reason I am. So I come, and so I come from a very critical thinking. I'm very critical of my own thought and everything. So, you know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah. I mean.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
No, please, Matt. Go for it.
In that case, with all the theory and the philosophy behind it, how would you say that? Empirical data backs up your belief system, Tim.
How empirical evidence backs up my belief in God? Is that what you're asking?
How much one foot is in philosophy and an outlook on life, and that's totally understandable and respectable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, how does it relate to like the empirical, how does God manifest? In other words, how would you see God manifest on a more scientific level?
That's good. Well, I think we talked about it before, the placebo effect. I find it funny that as far as I can understand about the placebo effect, again, I it's like faith and these things are like gravity, try it, it works. Placebo effect works on a belief, a faith, so to speak. I mean, as far as what I can tell, even scientifically, that's what it is. That's what it does. So therefore, I believe that is, now granted, I know we could go back then, well, I'm putting God into everything, but I believe that that's what it is. It works on faith. God's not up to his magic wand. You know what I mean? I kind of believe that, like, the Catholics believe that, they don't use birth control because, well, if God wants them to be pregnant, they get pregnant. If they have a dozen kids, well, no, it's called sex. You have sex, you get pregnant. So I think it's a stupid move done. But I do believe that there's certain things, like gravity, they're just laws of the universe. Faith works. I mean, even in the Bible.
Right, now you mentioned the placebo effect in faith. Now, what about, how can you see faith comparing and contrasting with probability?
Well, certainly. I mean, can you put coincidence into everything? I guess is what I'm going to kind of, if I can relate coincidence to probability. Okay, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
So what I'm saying is everything just a coincidence or probability? If I pray for, if it was to say, if I pray for my healing, whatever, if I have, and that healing occurs, is that always, but yet I've seen it time and time again. I've seen things happen. In other words, you know, I've seen things happen that are not out of the that can't be placed upon or placed within the realm of Occam's razor or the abuse thereof, so to speak, of Occam's razor, where you can, you know, kind of play it safe to say, well, I've seen things that have happened. That's what I've seen. You know, I've seen certain things that would be considered paranormal, you know, that would be outside of the reach of any kind of scientific understanding happen. Healings, just things, even if you want to call them strange, whatever. So that's what opens up my mind to believe that there is, you know, to say that there is. That's what opened up my mind. I wasn't even a believer and somebody prayed for me and I was healed of something. So that's what opened my mind to think, well, there's something more.
Hey, Tim, I don't think that just because we aren't yet scientifically able to explain it, that you automatically have to put God in there. Because, I mean, if you go back 500 years, I mean, there were things that we couldn't explain that were considered magic that now, because we can explain them, are science. You know, those things evolve, healings and things like that. So, I mean, to say that it's God is kind of like the intellectual equivalent of saying, uh-uh. Like somebody says, can you intellectually explain that? And you say, well, it's God. That's like saying, uh-uh. You know, I mean, just because you can't explain it doesn't mean you throw God in there.
Don't get me wrong. I don't. I don't throw God. I don't say that. Like I said, I don't believe God's up there with his magic wand and doing these things. I believe that I think that my healing was, or our people's healings can be put right in there with the placebo effect. And it's something that we would say naturally occurs, you know, within the body. I mean, we know the placebo effect works, whether you give somebody a little pill and make them believe it's an actual medicine, or whether the person is by faith, he prays and believes that God's going to heal him.
Actually, right there, I would have to stop you, Tim, because it has the placebo effect. This is where I would actually have to say that Beast, his argument that he brings to the table is quite valid, because the placebo effect, what's very interesting about the placebo effect is that it doesn't work at the same time. It is very much a 50-50 inconsistent thing. Some people it affects, and some people it doesn't. You know, and then that goes back to what Beast was saying about a huge margin. I mean, the placebo effect is probably the biggest margin I see of reasonable doubt.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're saying that, no, you're right. I'm not saying it works every time, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying the placebo effect is still a, if I want to say, a scientific thing. I mean, it still is a truth, right?
Yeah, even if it's not constant, it is a truth when it is constant. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the placebo effect has been known to work. And even, like you said, they tried out with pills, they tried out with this. And the man's mind is great, and it can work in many different ways. Do I associate God with everything? No, I don't. I don't associate God with everything. I don't believe that God is this, you know, like I said, the great wizard in the sky with a magic wand making my life. I believe that my understanding of God, and as I understand, has changed my worldview, and so therefore makes my life, my path, different than what it was. So in other words, you know, like I said, you can look at everything as evil, and everything will be evil. You can look at everything in a different light. The group of if I'm making sense there too, I'm sorry. Sometimes I can understand what I'm trying to say, but I have a hard time sometimes spitting it out to where everybody else can understand.
No, I think your articulation's fine. Actually, it's kind of leaning me towards a question that I think is relevant to what you're talking about. And it's the old chicken or the egg question. You know, did man make God, or did God make man? Which way do you view it?
Did man make? Well, I would say, obviously, I believe that God made the universe. But the point being is, I don't think that God created Adam and Eve. I think that God created and allowed it to take its course through evolution, through whatever, I believe. But I think man has made God as he is today, yes. If that's what you're asking, yes. I believe that God has made man, I think man has made God as he is today. But I don't believe that God is what man has him to be. Okay, so I don't think that God is, like I said, the great wizard in the sky who we just sit there and pray to, and he grants us all our wishes and drops money from the sky when we want to do this. Do I believe in miracles? Yes. Do I think that some things are plain coincidence within the Christian realm? Yes, I do. Do I believe that God has does God places emphasis on helping people? Yes, I do. But I don't think that he is as Christianity plays him out to be. That's why I always say I love Christianity in pursuit of the kingdom of God. I don't like what I see in Christianity, but that doesn't mean that I don't believe in God as he is.
Hey, Beast.
Yeah.
The guy that actually analyzed the human genome and found that the 23rd genome is actually the only genome that split with the ape, who actually proved that humans did evolve from apes. He had this whole study on it. It's on YouTube. You can check it out. I forgot his name. But he actually shares that same view in a sense that God used science to make that happen. And in other words, like the Dark Fool was saying, that the empirical evidence shows that process happened based on analyzing the human genome and finding the genome that was similar to the ape. So that's kind of what he's saying. I believe there are several Catholics that actually share that view, that sometimes science and God work together to make things happen, which doesn't always jive with what the Bible says. Kind of leaves it open to interpretation. But that kind of goes along with why people don't evolve the religion or why they still hold on to that viewpoint. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. I think this whole thing is very fascinating. Actually, good fodder for another show. I mean, we might actually do a chicken or egg show.
And there you go.
You know, and kind of talk about, you know, how in some ways, you know, science, you know, can be spun to include a strictly materialistic view, and in other ways it can be spun to include something that's a little more mystified. There's a number of variants that I see that can be derived from, you know, the basic parameters of this equation, so...
Right, and other topics that I could think of right offhand is that we're kind of talking about science versus religion, when in fact there's another thing that can come to mind is science in harmony with religion. I mean, one of the things that, you know me, I'm a big fan of Crowley. I mean, even though the guy was goofy and off the wall, there are some things that I really respect about the man. And one of his quotes was, the goal of science, the aim of religion, if I'm quoting that correctly.
Okay.
So yeah, all I'm saying is good fodder for other shows, more food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right, we got about 6 minutes left, so if anybody's got any closing thoughts on what we've discussed here today, let's go ahead and throw those out there.
You know, how about I'll go first real quick, and I'll get off the phone here for me. I wanted to say you guys have given me tons to think about. You guys have challenged me from day one, from the time that I followed Jason King from his Facebook, or from his MySpace site. There's the Cathedral of the Black Goat. I followed him over to YouTube and was talking to him there. And ever since everybody that I've met has given, well, okay, not everybody, but, you know, they've given me food for thought and have allowed me to change. I mean, you guys have brought back some good. I used to be a big reader. I'm a big reader now. So anyway, I don't want to take over that. But I want to thank everybody for that, though. And I'm glad, even though I know that we're on opposite ends of the spectrum, so to speak, I enjoy the challenge to which you guys bring to me to think. And you guys have actually given me a lot of things. I'm going to be gone for a week, as I wrote the message, because I got to go to Dallas to work. So anyway, hey, you guys,
thanks for coming on the show.
Have a great one, man. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, sounds good. Tim is hardcore. Honestly, if he understood what the actual principles behind Satanism is, he could easily be coined a satanic Christian, because he does apply that same kind of mindset. So
Which is funny, you know, which is quite a funny oxymoron right there.
Yeah, only in a rhetorical sense, man. I mean, if you really think about it, because it's kind of interconnected, it is what it is, but...
Right, right.
Silver Diet, you're still hanging on here, right?
Yeah, man, I guess just the last thing I want to throw out there is kind of just to tag on what Dark Cool said, that, or actually heard it from Peter Gilmore in an interview on this Church of Satan. He says a lot of times people think it's either A or B, and they don't really consider that third option. And I think if people would just consider that third option and analyze it and really look at both sides of the coin, I think, humanity as a race would evolve a lot more from doing that.
I don't often agree with much that Gilmore says, but if Peter Gilmore said that, I agree with it. So.
All right. I was thinking the exact same thing, but take care, man.
All right.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm glad you put the words to it. And my closing statement, considering everything that we've talked about today, I'd say, simply put, examine yourself before you bring things to the table. Examine what it is you believe, examine your perspective, and see how much, you know, test for yourself, not just for yourself, but in relation to other things, you know, how it relates, how well does it measure up, and see how valid it is, not just from your perspective, but from other perspectives in order to get a totality of, you know, whether it is valid or not. I'm not sure if that came out right, but hopefully you get my point.
Yeah, I get your point. I honestly think you should kind of sort of finish that out with knowing is half the battle. Go Joe.
G.I. Joe. All right.
Right. So my final bit here, obviously I wasn't trying to come to any kind of finality in this whole thing, but give people a model to challenge themselves. I think sometimes it's a lot more important to be fluid in your understanding and let that kind of be loose and rattle around as it needs to be. I think that this solves the difficulty of coming to the table with a presupposed disposition. If you allow that disposition to have a certain level of flexibility to it, it's easy to see around and find where you might be falling short. So,
Beast, that was fucking brilliant. Because let me tell you, that's pretty much what I was trying to say. Why is it that we hold on? The key is holding on. It's like if you're fluid, you won't hold on. You'll just, you know, kind of roll with it, see where it goes. If it, you know, and you know, not necessarily. Don't be too, you know, accepting, and don't be too challenging. You know what I mean? It's like kind of like. The fact that you can just, like, be fluid and say, okay, this works now. Okay, well, it doesn't work. It worked then. It doesn't work now. Okay, well, you know, you're less likely to be strict, rigid, dogmatic, and stagnating.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. All right, well, we've got a minute left to go, and I'm going to throw our intro up. Our outro up, and thank everybody for coming out, and don't forget to check out the Outbreak Edition tomorrow night at 11 p.m.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?